Well, as a parent or a teacher or maybe a caregiver, you may be in a position to help your child in many ways on a daily basis, but they also need to learn to do things on their own as well. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Really great to have you with us today as we talk about how you can help your children, the children in your life, make their own decisions and deal with their own problems at home or in school. Two guests for you. Dr. Myrna Scherr, back with us, is the creator of social-emotional learning programs for children and the problem-solving approach to discipline. Her books include Raising a Thinking Child, Raising a Thinking Child Workbook, and Thinking Parent, Thinking Child. And Dr. Myrna Scherr, thank you so much for joining us.
Larry, it's so great to be back with you today.
Well, it's great to have you back. And with us as well today, Jenny Waymeyer is a family living educator from the Walworth County UW Extension. She co-authored the supplemental program to Raising a Thinking Child for Parents in Wisconsin. And Jenny, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
It's really great to have you back. Well, now School's back in session, but before we sort of get into those nuts and bolts things, I want to go back to the basics here, because many people may not have heard you the first time you were on, Myrna. Let's talk about what is the problem-solving approach to discipline, and how does it differ from other approaches to parenting?
Well, the problem-solving approach really teaches children how to think about what they're doing and why they're doing it and how it affects not only other people, but how it affects themselves. And if they don't like what happens when they carry out an act, then we guide them to think of different ways to solve the problem. And it differs from other positive approaches. Obviously, it differs from, you know, negative power approach.
Yeah.
Psychologists today pretty much advise parents to explain to their children, you know, if they hit another child or grab a toy or, depending on the age, appropriate problems that come up with peers and parents and teachers, to explain to them why they should or shouldn't do what they're doing, or make suggestions. You know, you really ought to ask him for the toy. If you hit him, you might hurt him, and then you won't have any friends. The problem with that is that by the time the child is 4 years old, he's heard those explanations and suggestions 1,000 times, and he tunes out. And then the parent gets exasperated because the child isn't listening, and then might even go back to the power approach of yelling and threatening the child. So the problem-solving approach asks questions that get the child thinking about the impact he's having on what he's doing.
Are these
age 4, even 3-year-olds can begin to do this.
So really early. And does it apply? All right, I've got a 12-year-old.
Oh, absolutely. These skills are good for life. The skills get more complicated more sophisticated, I should say. A 12-year-old can plan ahead and recognize potential obstacles that might get in the way of reaching a goal, and talk about and think about how long it might take, that you don't always solve problems immediately. And it teaches them how to delay gratification and, you know, be patient. And that's a very good skill for planning homework time, if you want to get into that, for 12-year-olds. Everyone, no matter whether they're 2 or 92, likes to make their own decisions and think for themselves. They've just got to have the skills to do that.
And Jenny Waymeyer, as a family living educator for Walworth County and with UW Extension, you've had some experience, more than a little experience, with this, because you co-authored the supplemental program.
Yes, Larry, that's correct. We took Dr. Scherr's excellent research and the book and the workbook that she had put together, and we added our own little twist to help facilitators of family education programs really dive into those important concepts, not only for children to learn, but also for the adults to learn. we often joke that it's not really raising a thinking child, but oftentimes it's raising a thinking parent and thinking about how are you going to react to a situation that your child gets into. How are you going to help them make the important decisions that they need to make in their life? And probably most importantly, how are you going to empower them to make those decisions when you're not just standing right next to them?
Yeah. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. I haven't done that yet, so let me do it right now. As you listen, maybe you'd like to learn how to help the child or children in your life develop critical thinking skills. What techniques did you learn about parenting from how you were raised? Are you dealing with a particular situation with your child that you'd maybe like some advice from Dr. Myrna Scher or Jenny Waymire? I'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. And so certainly give us a call, shoot us an email, go on our Facebook page. Any of those will get you right into the program. As we think about, you know, I think I made a mistake this year as a parent in getting my child overscheduled. And how do you know
if you're common, Larry?
I wonder how do you know if you're ice skating night? How do you know if your child is overscheduled?
Well, you know, you can see the stress. They get frustrated. They can't finish their homework. Their interest in something might change. They complain, or they bottle it up, which is even more problematic because you want them to express what they're thinking. But here's where the problem-solving approach comes in again. What many parents might do is, you know, sit down with the child and plan for the child when he can do what and, you know, what time he should be home to do his homework and what time he can do this and that. And that what stresses the child even more, because who's doing the thinking here, the parent or the child? So what you can do is sit down with the child and literally draw out a day from the beginning of the time he would get home from school or when school ends to the time he goes to sleep. And children love to do this. You know, if school lets out at 3, I have soccer practice till 5, so that time is locked up, and I write in the word soccer from 3 to 5. Well, from 5 to 6, would you like to do your homework, or would you like to talk to your friends, or would you like to be on the computer? Let the child pick the activity and fill in that time slot until he goes to bed, and he might see that he can't fit everything into a day that he wants to. Now, we've got to eliminate something. Well, you decide what you want to eliminate, because if the parent decides, you're going to have tension between the parent and the child. Well, I don't want to do that. Let the child make that decision. He's much more likely to carry it out and not be stressed by it if it's his decision than if it's your decision.
Although,
does that make any sense?
It does, although if my child said, well, I'm going to skip the homework.
Well, you have to talk about what he has to do. How can he find time for what he has to do and still have time for what he wants to do?
Ah, gotcha. All right. Well, Marianne in Central Wisconsin has a question for you, too, so let's go there. Marianne, hi. Thank you for calling.
Oh, hi. I'm just wondering. I am a grandmother, but, you know, I've raised two children. I'm just wondering, what would you do then to prepare the child that's like a one-year-old and two-year-old that needs discipline? What would your approach be there then?
Well, Jenny, I'll let you jump in, but I have a cute little anecdote about an 18-month-old. She happened to have a sibling who was 4 years old, and getting the Raising a Thinking Child training program, and was listening to the parent, to the mother doing the lessons with the four-year-old. And 18-month-olds have passive language. And so she understood the questions. And one of the questions is, you know, if you don't like what might happen, if you grab a toy, this is to the four-year-old, can you think of a different way to get you know, that child will let you play with a toy. And we play with different and have, you know, fun games with the word different so that when we ask that question, it rings a fun bell. So the little 18-month-old is listening to these games, and one day she bit her father. Well, her father wasn't exposed to the Raising a Thinking Child program, and he was about to spank her and send her to her room. And the mother said, let me ask her a question. Can you think of a different way to show your daddy how you feel? And the 18-month-old looked at her father, paused, and gave him a big hug. And they didn't know what hit him. Needless to say, she was not spanked and sent to her room.
One simple sentence.
Can you think of a different way to show your daddy how you feel?
And Marianne, I think that I would also add that preparing your child by allowing them to make some small choices, allowing them to have some control, whether it's asking them, would you like to wear your pink socks today or your yellow socks today, really sets them up to make choices and to get them to think. Sometimes when a child's misbehaving, as Myrna just said, just asking the question, is that a good idea? Now, is that a good place to jump around? Is that a good time to do that? Again, stops the behavior and really gets the child to think about what is it that I really am trying to express.
Hmm.
Yeah, if a child's jumping on a couch, for example, is that a good place to jump or not a good place to jump? What might happen if you jump on the couch? And it doesn't matter if he says, I'll get it dirty, or if he says, I might fall and hurt myself. It really doesn't matter what he says. You're planting a seed. And then the great alternative solutions question, can you think of a different place to jump so that won't happen? And, you know, most children get on the floor and start jumping on the floor. And it's, you know, without, you know, telling him what to do or suggesting where he should jump or telling him to stop or explaining why he shouldn't jump on the couch. They tune all that out. I think most parents can recognize that the more you do the talking and the thinking, the less the child is listening.
Yeah, absolutely. Marianne, thank you. Yeah, appreciate your call very much. I want to give David a chance in Green Bay. David, hi, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
My wife and I raised three sons. They're all later 20s, early 30s now. But I let them, I always would ask them, what do you think? My sons had different interests, but we never made a scene if they cut their, you know, if they cut their fingers. I let them figure out what they want to do to some degree, but I let them. I have a workshop. I was raised on a farm, and I have table saws, and I have hammers and nails. I would tell them, go down and make something. I give them a project to do. And sometimes when they were very little, it didn't turn out very well, but I'd show them, okay, now this is what you need to do here and there, and I'd leave them alone. And the other thing that I would do is my dad, I'm from Upper Michigan originally, and the farm, he got too old to farm anymore, but he had a lot of machinery sitting around. My wife was just, she said, oh, they can't be riding around in that old tractors. I said, let them go. And they were 60. My oldest was 16. He took the other two. They'd go up there. They'd spend a week with my dad, and he would have them chop wood. He'd have them fix a door, window, and then he'd go out and fire up some of this old equipment that hadn't run in a long time. And yeah, maybe they made mistakes, but those boys today can replace a window, they can do plumbing, they've taken different paths in life. They're very capable young men right now. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't hover over them.
Well, thanks to David for calling. We'll get Myrna and Jenny both perhaps to make a comment. Myrna, a comment?
That's
from
wonderful. You know, I bet that your children felt proud, even if they made mistakes and it wasn't really perfect. I bet they felt proud of what they were doing, more so than if you had told them how to make it better. And they turned out just fine, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. Jenny, comment from you?
Well, David, I was thinking about with your kids being in their 20s and 30s, that was also a different time where we did allow kids to have more free play, and we did seem to give them more choices. I think, unfortunately, now we've adopted some new terms, things like helicopter parents, where they're so micromanaging their children that they don't have the opportunity to answer the question, what do you think, and what might happen if you do that? And so I really applaud you for allowing your children to make some of those decisions, and clearly they've grown up to be able to make those positive decisions in their lives.
Yeah.
And they'll probably raise their children the same way.
Yeah, no doubt. Thank you so much, David, for calling. I appreciate it. Talking today with Dr. Myrna Schur, creator of a social-emotional learning program for children and the problem-solving approach to discipline. Jenny Waymeyer is a family living educator for the Walworth County UW Extension and co-authored the supplemental program to Raising a Thinking Child for Parents in Wisconsin. Again, you have questions, comments, or maybe experiences to share, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. I'm Larry Mehler. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer today here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now, though, you may have a question for our guest. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. Now that the kids have gone back to school, how can that problem-solving approach help your children succeed in school? Or maybe they're not in school yet. How do you help your children succeed in life and their everyday living? Again, 1-800-642-1234. But email question from Kara in Menominee, whose daughter's the same age as my daughter. My daughter's 12, she says. She's been playing violin since third grade. 12, she'd probably be in seventh right now, or sixth at least. So probably 3 or 4 years. She wanted to play violin when she was younger. Now, getting her to practice is becoming a struggle. I wish I would have kept playing my instrument when I was younger. So I understand the regret and want to keep pushing her to play the violin. Do you have any advice?
That is a great question, Kara. I was thinking immediately about how sometimes what we're seeing is that parents are trying to live vicariously through their children. And so whether that means maybe giving them a little extra push in sports or in their academics or in this case in playing the violin, there might be some regret that I'm hearing that she didn't continue and perhaps is now trying to encourage her daughter so she doesn't have those same regrets. Sounds to me like this problem-solving approach could be really valuable to have that discussion between mother and daughter and to ask some simple questions that might really elicit what the real issue is. Perhaps it's not so much about the actual violin, but perhaps all of her friends are playing wind instruments and, you know, she's feeling isolated. Or perhaps she just doesn't care to do it anymore and has some other interests. But it might just be sitting down and saying, let's talk about this. How are you feeling? What might happen if you choose not to play the violin anymore? How will you feel? How will I feel as your parent, and how will the other people in your orchestra feel? But it's going to be, again, engaging them in that dialogue to really bring out what's the real issue.
Mm.
That's perfect. And also you can add, if you really don't want to play violin, what does interest you? And show her that you're interested in what she's interested in and not what you're interested in.
Yeah, my daughter started out on piano, and I really wanted her to play the piano, but and she can still, she went 3 years of practices or so, but she just decided she wanted to play drums.
And mm-hmm.
So now she's playing.
She's lucky. To show you how old I am, that's why I wanted to play drums when I was that age, and they said girls don't play drums. They do now, though.
Yeah, they sure do, and she's really enjoying the drums. That I keep wishing, but I never say it to her, but I keep wishing that she'd also keep going with the piano. But here I am again trying to push her to do ever more things.
And you don't want to overschedule her.
yeah, there's too much of that already. We had a comment from Patricia in Stevens Point. I recommend asking questions, the who, what, where, when, why, and how questions. That is how we raised our sons, and it was very good to do. I also taught them the creative problem-solving process and the tools which they still use today.
Well, so far, everybody who's let their children think for themselves has been very pleased with it.
I think you're exactly right there. And I'll let Moore join in. The number to call, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. A question from Jen from Facebook. Our second grader has always made friends easily and been very outgoing. Suddenly, this year, she keeps saying everyone hates her and no one wants to be around her. She projects these emotions through anger and defiance. She's also struggling with focus and math, which seems to play into the scenario. Any suggestions on how to get our bubbly girl back? That's a tough one.
Well, that's you got to find out again what the real problem is, which caused which. There must be something that she started doing that created the need for kids to stay away from her. Is she bullying them? Is she bullying them verbally? Is she physically bullying them? You need to talk to her about why she thinks the other children are staying away from her and what can she do. Well, first of all, you want to talk to her about her feelings about it. You want her to let her express her feelings because if you talk about that enough, it might defray some of the anger and hostility. To show her that you care how she feels and you want her to care how she feels. And then how do you think the other children are feeling when they, you know, do that? And then can you think of something you can do, you know, so they'll be your friends again? And she probably, you know, is reacting emotionally to being rejected rather than really stopping and thinking through how she might regain their friendship.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And it does work. I mean, you can even have her make up a story. How old is she now? Seven?
Second grader, so probably seven, yeah.
Well, she can do this orally. She doesn't have to write it out. But one very effective technique is to have children make up a story about a child her age who used to have a lot of friends, and suddenly the children are staying away from her, and the story ends up with her having lots of friends again. And you fill in the middle and make it up. It doesn't have to be real life. Just make up a story about how that could happen. And kids love to do that. And, you know, include in the story how she feels and how she thinks the other kids feel. And it really gets her thinking about, you know, what's going on and not just reacting.
Yeah. Very good points. Terry in Colfax has a question, I believe. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My question is, how do you handle discipline when you have three generations under one roof? And grandpa and grandma, mom and dad, and then I have a 5-year-old granddaughter and a 7-year-old grandson. What my current issue is I try to be a sounding board for my grandson, and I try to reinforce what his parents say, but I want to keep the communication open, and when he comes to me, I want him to feel he can be open with me.
Mm-hmm. You're the father?
Grandfather.
I'm the grandfather.
You're the grandfather. Well, that's, first of all, that's the first step, that you want him to be open with you. Is there anyone in the household that isn't interested in his opening up and rather wants to just tell him what to do all the time?
Oh, we all are, and my son has my values as we raised him, and we're baby boomers. But it seems there's sometimes there's a difference of opinion between the grandparents and my son and my daughter-in-law.
Sometimes the adults have to sit down and talk with each other. You know, what happens when when one of us lets the child make decisions and another of us tells them what to do all the time? Do you think that's confusing or not confusing? We have a problem here, and we have to solve this together and involve all the adults in the house planning on how they can come to agreement on how to talk to the children.
And then I think you can apply the problem-solving approach as a grandparent, right?
Oh, absolutely.
I would think.
Well, and we might even want to consider using the problem-solving approach when we have that meeting between mom, dad, grandma, and grandpa to say, you know, what might happen if mom and dad say one thing and grandma and grandpa say another thing? Well, does it create friction and tension among the adults, but it's very confusing to the child. And so they're not sure what their behavioral expectations are because they're trying to please everyone that's in their family. So I think that this is a really excellent example, multi-generations. When we teach this program throughout Wisconsin, and sometimes we have one parent attend, and the other parent's not supportive. And it's not because they don't want to be supportive. It's that they don't understand the strategies and the words to use to really encourage that critical thinking skill.
Terry, good luck. It sounds like, you know, this is, I was actually raised as a kid. We had grandma and grandpa in our home. We lived on a farm, grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, and my two brothers and my sister. So I can understand how those and how kids might, if mom just said no, let's run and see what grandma has to say about the same topic, which can create all. I understand all those little nuances for sure.
Well, I think, you know, if we leave you with no other thought today, that the adults in the house really need to get together and ask the very questions Jenny suggested. Is it a good idea or not a good idea for us to, you know, treat the children differently in talking to them, and what can we do to solve this problem?
Let's turn next to Jim in Ashland. Jim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I wanted to go back to the piano and drums thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the girl should know that if you are a percussionist and you've got a piano background, that opens up a whole lot more instruments with the chimes and the mallet instruments, and they're very compatible. Some even consider the piano a percussion instrument.
You know, you're exactly right. My daughter also plays handbells.
That'll help too.
Sounds talented. That's a great idea, though, is to give more meaning to what she's doing.
And you're right. The piano, learning to play the piano, at least, you know, she's not a concert pianist, but it really helped her with her drums and handbells as well. So you're exactly right, Jim.
Yeah, and it helps fit in with, you know, wider scope than the instrument alone, making it more important to her and more interesting.
Yeah, thank you for that comment. I appreciate it very much. You may have a comment or you may have a question as well as we visit with our two guests, Dr. Myrna Scher, a creator of the social-emotional learning programs. Her books include Raising a Thinking Child, Raising a Thinking Child Workbook, and Thinking Parent, Thinking Child. Great to have her with us as well. Jenny Waymire, family living educator from Walworth County, UW Extension. She co-authored the supplemental program to Raising a Thinking Child for parents in Wisconsin. And great to have them both with us. Again, you can join in with your own questions or experiences at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. We had a caller question from Mary in Madison. I had a hard time telling my son what to do when he was younger, and now it still plays out in his life, and he is in his 30s. What can I do to help him if he won't hear me out at all? Boy.
The problem between a mother and her 30-year-old son?
Yeah. Have you dealt with that before, Myrna?
Well, the same approach. I had a parent once of a 4-year-old who said, before she had the Raising a Thinking Child program, I used to think I listened to my child, but now I really hear her. And I thought that was a great quote. it's possible that the 30-year-old as a young child didn't feel listened to and still doesn't feel listened to. And if the parent can make a big deal that I'm really listening to you and not do all the talking and all the thinking, that's a first step toward reaching communication.
I would agree. I agree with you, Myrna, and you know, going back to thinking about, am I really listening, or am I always offering my suggestions and my suggestions with my explanations, and I'm not giving my child, either as a small child or as an adult, an opportunity to make choices and to then face the consequences of those choices. As parents, we're going to have those times where our child had choices and they made the wrong choice. So now what are we going to do about it? Let's learn from it and think about what might have happened if I did something else, and what can I do so this won't happen again.
We,
right, and also talk about how you feel about what happened.
What, we had a Facebook question from Tatiana, who says, my 4-year-old is in 4K hanging out with the school bully. My son has always been extremely well-behaved and still is in school, but when he gets home, he's bossy, demanding, and rude. I don't want to tell him who he can be friends with, and I'm not sure how to deal with these new changes in his behavior.
He's 4 years old?
Yes.
Is he the bully or being bullied at school?
He hangs out with the school bully.
At age four, we don't really call four-year-olds bullies. We call them aggressive, which is a precursor to genuine bullying. He's still hanging out with the aggressive kids, and like-minded children pick kids like them to hang out with. And there again, the problem-solving approach is, you know, why do you have a need to hang out or to be friends with, name the children he's friends with, you know, and find out what he's thinking and feeling about why he's choosing those kids. Is he, you want children to have constructive, not destructive friendships when they're little, or else they'll become victims of peer pressure when they're older to make friends. And so to prevent that, you want them to have constructive experiences. And without telling them what to do, you can get him to think about what he's doing, so he will make the decision that those children are not good friends or good to be friends with. What do you do when you're with those kids? How does that make you feel? Do you want to feel that way? What can you do so you won't feel that way? Questions like that. He may not answer them as soon as you ask them, but you're planting a seed and getting him to think about it, which is the important first step.
I also think that 4-year-olds are much smarter than we give them credit for. And a 4-year-old, this might be their first exposure to school atmospheres. And that child might have seen from a very early point that if I can align myself with the people who make others feel bad so I don't feel bad, I might align myself with them. So as Myrna pointed out, asking those questions, those, especially the feeling questions, is really pivotal. And even asking, it sounds like when the child gets home, is interacting with the parents in a negative way, saying, you know, how do you think that makes me feel when you treat me like that? And sometimes that's enough to get a child to really think, boy, you know, it's not just about me. It's about the other people in my life, even at 4 years old.
And you know, that's the beginning of empathy building. If you say to the child, and again, the common technique that psychologists use today is, I feel angry when, rather than, how do you think I feel when? You see the difference?
Yeah, yes.
Still talking about feelings, but in one case you're telling him how you feel, in the other case you're guiding him to think about how you feel, which will have a longer impact.
Well, Jenny, I'm wondering about the current programs in Wisconsin for raising a thinking child. What are those programs?
We run 8-week sessions throughout Wisconsin. Currently, we have some programs going on in Walworth County, Oconto County. We have programs beginning in Marquette County as well. If people want to visit our website, which is fyi.uwex.edu. They can type in Raising a Thinking Child, and they can find a program that's close to them.
And I believe we have that up on our Facebook page. Cheyenne, do we have that up? Yeah, Cheyenne's just telling me, our producer's just saying, yeah, we have that up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So if you didn't get that, you can just go to our page. And so the program's in, what did you say, 4 or 5 counties now?
Yes, we will, beginning in the spring, I think we'll see some more beginning. We should be in about 8 to 10 counties this spring. And they are all across Wisconsin. You may have to travel just a little bit to participate in the 8-week class, but Dr. Scher's book and workbook are also good companion pieces if you are not able to attend a class, but you want to work through some of the strategies and techniques with your 4 to 7-year-old. It requires a box of crayons and a pen or a pencil and spending maybe 5 or 10 minutes a day on some really great activities that will help engage your child in their own thinking process.
So we're not talking about huge amounts of time even here.
Not at all. It's very doable, even for the busiest and overscheduled families, to just say we're going to take 5 minutes after dinner each time, or Saturday mornings we're going to spend a little bit of time working on this. And it's just amazing, and it's very rewarding to see the kinds of results that we're seeing here in Wisconsin.
Well, I tell you what, it's really remarkable. You've given me last time you were on, and this time as well, some great examples of what can happen when this problem-solving approach is used. And I guess we should just say, you know what, we should have you on again to talk about it some more at some point.
Oh, Larry, that would be wonderful, because parents who really try this just can't believe the impact it's having. And it's not just for children that have problems. It's for all children, because it prevents problems from coming up later, like that child who was fine and suddenly is losing her friends. This kind of approach prevents that from happening. And we have 30 years of research behind it. Let me give you my website, too.
Yes.
Because it has copies of all the books that are available. We also have one called Raising a Thinking Preteen for those who don't have very young children, for parents of 8 to 12-year-olds. It's www.thinkingchild.com. That's www.thinkingchild.com.
And if we don't have that up on our Facebook page, we'll definitely get it up.
Oh, that would be wonderful. And I really would love it if we came back. I know parents who have called the Wisconsin group have really loved the program. Does Jenny have a minute to talk about how the parents are responding to the training?
Sure. Jenny, you got one more minute to talk about that?
Absolutely. We're just having a fantastic results here in Wisconsin. And as Myrna had some examples of some particular cases, I think of one young mother who had 2 young boys, and she was really struggling and getting phone calls from school almost daily. And she was very frustrated, and she came to our program. And after the first week, she was a little pessimistic and said, you know, I'm not really sure if this is going to work. The behaviors in our house are really extreme. And they were. And I said, if you can just come every week, I think this program can work for you. And by the end of the 4th week, the phone stopped ringing every day. And by the end of the 6th week, the school actually called me and said, I don't know what it is that you're teaching, but keep teaching it, and let's do it here. So it's those kinds of things that are really inspiring to us as facilitators for this program, and why we're so appreciative of Dr. Scher's work, because this program can work for all types of behaviors, and it is for all families and all children.
Well, I want to thank you both very much for taking time to be with us today, and we'll do this again. We'll have another chat down the road. Myrna, Jenny, thank you again for being with us.
Thank you, Larry.
Larry, we hope we have lots of new problem solvers in the state of Wisconsin and surrounding states.
Right. Myrna Scher is creator of social-emotional learning programs for children. And her books include Raising a Thinking Child, Raising a Thinking Child Workbook, and Thinking Parent and Thinking Child. Jenny Waymire, family living educator for Walworth County, and she co-authored the supplemental program to Raising a Thinking Child for parents in Wisconsin. And if you didn't get down the information on their sites, Please go to our Facebook page. Our Facebook page titled The Larry Miller Show. Pretty easy to go there and get that information. And it's great to have them on, and we'll have them on again. When you think of an entrepreneurial spirit, and we're going to stay with children here now, when you think of an entrepreneurial spirit, you probably don't associate it necessarily with children's, but there's a new book out. It's called Raising Can-Do Kids, and I think it goes in many ways along with what we've just been hearing about with our two guests talking about their problem-solving approach. Today we're talking with Richard Rendy, developmental psychologist, researcher, educator, and consultant. He is the co-author of Raising Can-Do Kids with Jen Prosek, and we'll be visiting with him in just a minute here on the Ideas Network.